Good morning, good morning, good morning, and thank you for joining me on another episode of Face to Face Talk Show. I don't want to tell everyone on the Roundtable Talk Show, but this Face to Face Talk Show is one of my favorite shows. I enjoy it because it allows me the freedom to speak, to share some of my views, my thoughts, and ask the hard questions and have the uncomfortable conversations, all so we can make this world a better place. So before we start the conversation today, I'm going to go ahead and invite you to go ahead and share the show. Let someone know Face to Face Talk Show is live because change starts with a conversation. So again, I'm your host, Sharifa Hardy. I'm going to go ahead and introduce our guest, Mr. Salim Amir Bey is joining us. Good morning, Salim. How are you?
Good morning. Salam to everybody. How are you?
I'm fine. Salam to you. What brings you back week after week after week? You've been here, and I'm so grateful for your support for months now. Why do you join us on the Face to Face Talk Show?
Well, personally, I think it gives some attributes to consciousness. Conversation is something that we have to have. We got to get the emotions out of things, start getting back to logic. We got a lot of problems, and I think one of the best ways to do that is to have a conversation. So that's why I come back here.
I enjoy having you on the show because too often we get caught up in that mindset of the system is broken, the system is broken. And I'm one of those people, I must admit that I was there. I was in the system is broken, it isn't working. And you're like, no, it's not that it's broken. It's doing exactly what it was intended and what it was written to do.
Absolutely. Just like the conversation that we had last week, and a lot of people disagreed with what I said about the word black. But they have to understand where I'm coming from with stuff like that. It's not that I don't think that we can't be what we want to be. We were the kings and queens of the earth. We started everything from civilization all the way down to mathematics and astrology and all that. It's just that I think with all the king mind power that we have, we don't need to keep taking other people's words and using them. More means black. Black means this. And I think last week, I understand what everybody was coming from, but I was talking about black as far as a legal conversation. And that type of platform, we need to start taking things out and saying that, like, this emotional attack on us, because there's a lot of problems that we have ourselves that we can't blame on other groups and other people. And that's why I always feel like coming back, because we can have that conversation. Nobody's getting mad. Ain't nobody, well, one time that I've been here that somebody's gotten upset. But even the way that you deal with it after, it's not like, oh, I'm gonna get this person on Twitter. You know what I'm saying? Or I'm gonna get this person on Instagram. I mean, we have that conversation, we go about it. If there's something that we didn't like or whatever, we talk about it the next week. And that's what I think is great. That's why I think it's so beneficial.
Yes, thank you. Raylene Taylor is a wonderful friend of mine. We've been friends since high school, and she is one of those people that when I'm not sure I'm on the right track, I can give her a call and get her opinion. I love having her on the show. Raylene Taylor, thank you for joining us this morning.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
You are so welcome. What do you do, Raylene?
I am a licensed clinical social worker. I am a therapist by trade. I provide mental health therapy to families and children and other individuals that are experiencing some mental health difficulties. I also too am the founder of Radiant Solutions, which is a wellness LLC, basically really just focusing in on people's resiliency. I really love working with individuals who are in the midst of their trauma and who just needs that space and that place to be held.
Yes, I like having you here because I think we need some type of therapeutic aspect to the show, because sometimes we have these deep conversations and then you're there with the little radiant smile to remind us to have empathy, because empathy is not always one of my strong points. So I appreciate you. We also have Miss Lanika joining us for the third time. I am so excited to have you here. Good morning, Lanika. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning, everyone. I just want to say thanks for allowing me to be part of this incredible panel, and thanks for having me.
I like when you're on the show because I like outspoken people. I like people who are not afraid to speak their views. And especially last week, it was like Raylene was like, oh, let's love the world. You're like, yes, let's love them, but let's not forget about holding them to task. So it's like, I like having that balance. What do you do, Lanika?
Well, I am a motivational speaker. They call me the bounce back queen. Because if you guys got to know my story and everything that I've been through since taking my first breath, I really have bounced back from everything. And that's what I teach people. You know, it's similar to Raylene, but we have two different approaches. So I'm like, if we could blend the two together, you know, because some people will abuse that, you know, they will abuse somebody's niceness. And it's like, I'm sweet as pie, but do not let my Baltimore come out.
She threw in the Baltimore. I like it in the Baltimore. It didn't even have an L in there. It was just I like that. I like that. And joining us for the second time this week, Miss Tanya McKenzie. Good morning, Tanya. How are you?
Hey, good morning, everyone. So glad to be here again.
I love your background. Ask me, what is hashtag LadyBoss?
So Lady Boss is a group on Facebook and LinkedIn that I started a couple months ago just to foster a healthy environment for alpha female business women that really like to support other women, that want to be able to celebrate their own wins without feeling so braggadocious, but really helping the other women in the group understand that you can, you know, jump hurdles, we can support each other without feeling some kind of contentious way or competitive way. And it's really fostering a healthy alpha female businesswoman mindset where it's, you know, we can go get it, provide each other with tools and just share our stories and our struggles.
Mm-hmm. So the name of the group is?
Lady Boss.
Lady Boss. I'm gonna have to check it out. What is an alpha female as far as business? What is that?
You know, one of the things that I talk about a lot is bold branding, right? And I was on a panel recently and they asked, why bold branding? I said, because, you know, it's done for the women being passive and just being nice about everything. So kind of like Lanika, like, okay, you know, there are ladies that are just really nice and passive. It's time to be aggressive about what we want, what we are going after, to say it, not be afraid of the challenge that might be presented, but, you know, understanding that it could be hard, but we're about that. Like, these are the things that I want to accomplish. I want to see you speak it. I want to see you go after it. Let's plan what that looks like and how we can help each other, you know, navigate those murky waters to get there. Men do it all the time, but women seem to sometimes kind of shy away from the spotlight of the C-suite or the spotlight that it might bring to them if they are successful. People say it all the time, like, don't be afraid of your own success. I think sometimes we are, but it's healthy to have those type of environment where we can foster that with each other and know that it's a non-judgmental arena, but I want to help you. I want to help you get to wherever you're going. So, you know, ask for help. We have a problem with that. Just a healthy space where we can do all that, say what we want and help each other get it.
Yes. Well, as soon as we finish the show, maybe during the show, but I'm going to go ahead and find that and join that group because I like working with alpha females. I'm an alpha female and everyone can't work with me, but I want to go ahead and introduce my co-host, Mr. Paul Foss. Good morning, Paul. How are you?
I am good, good, good. A little crazy. I got people outside driving my cars on the trucks. The move has started. So I'm shipping the cars down today. So just juggling a million things, but I'm always good. You know that.
Yes, it looks like you're in a box. Like, that's kind of cool. Like one of those little solitaire boxes. We got to save Paul, you guys. Let's get Paul out of there.
My entire house is packed up. I'm living with about three boxes. I got one fork, a cup. I think my wife left me three sheets of toilet paper, and I got to make it through two more days. So we're getting ready for the move, but it's awesome. So,
Paul, I'm so glad you're here today because I have to have this discussion. It's something that's dear to my heart, and I want to talk about it. Why do we feel that people only steal loaves of bread to feed their family? Is that what our prison systems are full of?
Yes, everyone in the prison system stole a loaf of bread. No, it's funny that, it's not funny, but that's the example always given, you know, someone in jail over stealing a loaf of bread. There are a lot of people in jails and prisons who deserve to be in jails and prisons. There's also a lot of people in jails and prisons who absolutely do not deserve to be in jails and prisons, or there are people who've been sent to jail and prison who deserve to be out now. They paid their debt to society, but that's never going to change in this country while we have a for-profit prison system that hundreds of millions of dollars are being made on. If I am correct, don't know if I am, I think we have more people incarcerated in this country than all other countries combined. Because we have a system designed for profit. And who is going to vote against a for-profit system when often the people in power, judges and others, from what I understand, are involved in the process. And our system is set up in this country from the conversations I've had where it's very difficult for someone who gets out of the system, the prison system, to stay out. I was talking to someone who, a friend of mine who I know that was incarcerated, but he came out, he's got no driver's license, no income, yet he's supposed to check in with his parole officer every day. How's he supposed to get there? You know, don't have any money to take a bus, don't have a job, you know, don't have a driver's license. So the system is rigged against people to even come out. Do I 100% believe there's people who deserve to be in prison? I believe there are people who deserve to be in prison for the rest of their life and longer. But I think that we have incarcerated way too many people in this country. I think it's just broken and needs to be overhauled completely. And the easiest and best thing to start looking at is the money.
Mm-hmm. Yes, because they're now branded with that scarlet F, that felon. So there's not so much that they can do. Salim, you said absolutely.
Yeah, so what Paul touched on is absolutely fact. So up until, I'd say 1970, we had less than 700,000 people in jail, in prisons, right? We are 5% of the world's population, but we have 25% of the world's incarcerated population. So one out of four in the whole world is incarcerated in the United States. From the 70s to now, we have 2.3 million people in prison. So when you think about where it started, you know, and I hate to try to pull everything back to slavery, but that's where the penitentiary system started. It wasn't what the Quakers had initially done when they came to the United States. They needed something to bring back the money of slavery. So back in the 1860s, they start doing convict leasing because our people, once we had gotten free, we started getting capital crimes or capital punishment for like the mediocre stuff, loitering, soliciting. And we were going back to the same plantations that we had just been freed from. Now it's, since our population is on this materialistic, I got to have it, it can't be 6 months old and I got to get a new one. Now that's where most of the products are coming from. So not only are they being locked up for these barbarian, draconian type sentences, they're creating products. You know, I mean, missile numbers, the missile coatings that go into nuclear missiles, they're being made in prison. Makeup, hair weave, I mean, anything you could think of. But these guys can't get college educations anymore. You go to some states, they can't get any type of like free education, no libraries, no nothing. So if you look at society right now, especially our neighborhoods, that's all public school is equipping them for, is to be in prison because it makes money.
Mm-hmm. Lanika, I would love to hear your thoughts.
I absolutely agree with everything that was said. I know, but one thing I'll say is I like to tell people I wear many hats, but they all fit. And one thing that I have done, I've never been to law school. I'm not a paralegal, but I have helped at least 15 guys and two ladies that I know was innocent and had holes in their cases and have been incarcerated for just being black, really, to tell you the truth. You know, it's been, I've seen everything from jury members being asleep at the trial, the judge telling somebody to sit up. This is in the transcript and nothing being done. My brother, I have a brother right now who, you know, has some mental issues. He was in a wellness facility, let someone know that, you know, he was having these issues. And when nobody did anything, they sent my brother to jail and he's still in jail. So I've been trying to work on getting him, you know, like having them.
Okay, I don't mean to cut you off, but that's what I tend to do. I just want to make, because I just want to make sure that I'm clear. So what you said is you had a brother who was in a mental facility, right? Mm-hmm. So he had mental issues, had not committed any crime, correct?
Well, he was in a, he was in like a house, like a wellness house. And he was having these thoughts, you know, having issues. And he told the supervisors or whoever there, the people in charge, and nobody did anything. And when he got into an altercation with somebody, they sent my little brother to jail. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, this is not where he needs to be. He needs to be in a proper facility so that way he can get the help that he needs. Because, you know, we have a lot of PTSD and, you know, on top of his mental issues. So they told his public defender told him that he cannot have a psych eval. And I'm like, why not? So I've been working with trying to get that done, and that's been a task. So the system is completely broken, especially for us, because I told her if my brother looked a certain type of way, y'all would be trying to find a reason why you can give him a psych eval and not a reason why you can't have one.
How long has he been in the jail?
Since November of last year.
Lenika, is it because of, would you say, economics? Meaning, if he was my brother, and or not my brother, because I don't have that kind of money, but someone whose family had $1 million, you know, and could hire the best lawyers, the best team, do you think he'd be out? Is it an economic thing beyond, I understand the race issue and all those, but it, you know, I joke all the time, which probably shouldn't be a joke, but like, oh, you know, what happens if you do that? I'm like, look, if I do that, I'm a father, I'm a business owner, I'm a law-abiding citizen, I'm not going to jail. Like, you know, we talk about it in my circles, like, I'll be fine. Like, I'm a good guy, I've got no record, I can-
But I think what you're talking about, Paul, is the whole idea, the phrase that became very popular a few years ago of affluenza.
Yeah, because I think from what I learned of the term affluenza, affluenza is more, I didn't know. I mean, I'm rich, and so I didn't even know that what I was doing was better. I've been spoiled my whole life, so I didn't know the rules. I know the rules. What I'm just talking about is if I got caught stealing that loaf of bread, he's a businessman, he's a father, he's a good guy, and I would have top lawyers that would find every reason to get me out.
Whereas that's affluenza.
Somebody else from a different economic background, maybe a different race, maybe different, wouldn't have those opportunities, which is a flaw in the system. It just is. I don't know the correct answer because, you know, it always tells me, people say like, well, I don't see color. I see color. I see that, you know, that I'm white. I see men and women. I do see color. I just don't see it differently.
Let's allow Lenika to answer Paul's question. And then I see Tanya had a comment.
I absolutely believe that, you know, if we was able to have a paid lawyer or somebody that could properly represent him. Look, I'll give you this. His public defender didn't call me back for 3 weeks. And when she called me back on a Saturday evening and has not called me back since. You know, it's like she told him that because he smoked marijuana, which in Maryland, he's fine with that, he could not get a psych eval. And I said, baby, that's not the law. What are you talking about? Like, you're making up stuff. So that's what I've been trying to go above supervisors and trying to, you know, and that is pulling teeth, especially with me being in South Carolina. And because I told her, I said, I'm the pull up queen. I would have been pulled up. It's the only reason why I have not is because I am in South Carolina, but what you're doing to my little brother is wrong. You know, like anybody, any psychiatrist will have a conversation, and he's so sweet as pie. He does not bother anybody, but he's not going to take your stuff either. It's like, you know, when you push him, you're pushing the wrong one. And, you know, I hate that he's there because I'm like, my brother's not a criminal. My little brother's not a criminal at all, but the system that it is has turned him into one to make him appear to be this hardened criminal, and all he has is, you know, mental issues that can be treated properly if he was in a correct facility.
Mm-hmm. What charges do he have? Do you know what charges they?
I know one is arson.
Okay.
And that's the main one that I think is arson. He told somebody, like, I feel like he kept having this altercation with this person. He was like, I feel like I'm about to blow up. Like something's about to blow up. And the staff told him, as long as you don't burn the house down, like, what do you mean? He's coming to you telling you that he's having some issues and thoughts beforehand. He's having problems. Multiple people had issues with this same person and they did nothing. They kept everybody into the house, just kept picking. And then when my little brother blows up, he's the one to get sent away. And I'm like, he been told y'all, you know, and I didn't find out any of this till after the fact. So, you know, of course I would have intervened before, but I truly didn't know. He did not tell me all of that beforehand.
Tanya, I'd love to hear from you.
You know, I love what Salim said and how he explained the path of how we got to this place where we are the most incarcerated race in penitentiaries and prisons and what has led up to that. But even taking that information and being able to process it in a way as a Black mother, a gun violence survivor, a sexual assault survivor, watching some of our communities not take that information into account and do better. Like, I'm always looking for the solution, not just to always continue to harp on the problem. We know what the problem is. I want to see us be able to take that problem and do better in regards to solutions. And let me be clear, growing up where we see some of these behaviors that will continue to lead us behind bars and lead our young Black men behind bars and allow for it to have a pass or coddle it instead of deterring it, is where I fall on the other side of this. Like, we need to really be honest about what the system is, what it looks like, and how we keep us from falling into that system as much as possible. Now, we know that the system is set up in a way that, you know, we don't have the benefit of the doubt. So I just look at our situation, and as parents, as Black women, as Black mothers, Black fathers, doing better by our youth and setting them up in a way to succeed rather than kind of coddle their first intuition to just, oh, it's not a big deal, or, you know, they're going to treat us like that anyways. It's hard for me to watch that, knowing what the issue is instead of continuing to blame it on the system, being a part of the solution. And I want to be clear, when I look at, you know, I do a lot of work with police departments and things of that nature. And one of the conversations that we have that's very important is how African Americans continue to downplay some things or talk against law enforcement, where, let's say, the Hispanic community has decided, well, let's be a part of this system, right? You become a part of the system to help fix the system. So, like with LA County, they have a very large population of Hispanic leadership in the force now. They're hiring their aunties, mamas, uncles, cousins. Now they're a part of the system. So that now they've separated themselves from us in a way where we're still saying, you know, it's against us. They're against us. So let's not even be a part of it. I like to find solutions for the problems to start to minimize it and break it down into small chunks so we can deal with things like that. Because like you, Lanika, my younger brother, my mom was pregnant when she got shot with him. He was born with bipolar, and he had been in and out of jail most of his, from his youth all the way into his adulthood. And I got tired of seeing that. But I did have a heart-to-heart with him about, like, dude, I'm gonna need you to stop, because I don't want to have to bury you, and this system will bury you. So when he got tired of being tired, he started making some changes in his own life. It doesn't mean that the system isn't still broken. It just means that you need to live long enough for us to continue this fight.
Yes, I think
I just want us to look at it in a way where we are becoming a part of the solution.
Yes, I hear you. I definitely agree. It was I made the same exact comments during the riots and alluding that many more people should head to the career section. We had our chief of police come out and speak, and he talked about a lot of the careers. Even if you don't want to be on the front line, you could be a clerk. You can be so many different positions, but be a part of the solution. Send your kids to be a part of the judicial system. You know, that's what I definitely agree with you, Tanya. Raylene, I'd love to hear from you, especially on your thoughts, because you're a Hispanic and African-American, so you can see it from both sides, and a therapist.
Right. Well, what I do know and what I've seen in regards to, and Tanya's right, when it comes to the police department and how the increase of Latino officers are present. But I also have heard from my African-American counterparts who are officers that they have a harder time just in general, throughout the process, throughout the application process. So it is oftentimes made to just be barriers, right? And so we talk about those barriers and we talk about them from a place of having to be the best, work the hardest in order to just get the recognition that's needed. Coming from even my clinical standpoint and working with other therapists who have the same degrees, probably not even as much experience as I have, I still have to work harder. I still have to prove myself in an area that I feel like I'm pretty grounded and solid in. And I just want to go back because what came up to mind for me was a restorative justice model that is currently being implemented in many different avenues of law enforcement as well as in the school system. So right now the school is really pushing for restorative justice because they've seen so many of our African-American, particularly males, getting suspended at higher rates, getting removed from school at higher rates. So they've created a restorative justice model to see and to really have those discussions about what are the impacts, how do we stop it, how do we look at things from a perspective of the whole child, the whole individual, instead of looking at that action or fraction that person has done, right? So the restorative justice model really comes from a place of looking at that whole person, that person that has done an infraction, and really looking at all the experiences that they've had in order to restore the quality and the expectation that is needed to move forward. What we do know about the prison system and what we do know about the governmental system, they look at our third grade African-American boys and they can prove or discuss how many prisons are going to be needed to be built within the next 10 to 15 years after that young boy in third grade is now an adult. So that says a lot about just the perspective that America has on our African-American youth. And the numbers, I always go back to numbers and how, you know, perhaps looking at that from the perspective of, like Tanya said, getting our children in line so that third grade they are either, you know, identified gifted, able to read, able to have those curriculum situations in place so they're not being tracked and they're not able to do, you know, or they're not being impaired from doing what they need to do. I mean, let's think about just standardized testing alone. We start standardized testing our first graders to get them on the track to see where they're going to be, you know, after high school. So I just think it's a systemic, deeper core issue that, you know, I mean, I think one conversation is great, but I think we need to really look at multiple factors within the prison system and in the development of our African-American youth.
Salim, your thoughts?
You brought up something about the numbers with the education, right? So let's think about that for a minute, right? Why are they doing that? Because when SATs or standardized testings or even the IQ test, when the IQ test was brought over here to these countries from the other countries like France, Germany, all the things like that, they were tailored for the European. And they were tailored so many times that Europeans got conditioned for it. So if you go into a European mostly school or segregated school or Irish school, Jewish school, things like that, the curriculum is different, right? But on the other hand, which I can't just say it's all curriculum, I'm from the projects. I got 168 IQ. You know how many times I've been called sellout, white boy, all that for wanting to read a book? You know, when I went to kindergarten, my grandmother had to come to the kindergarten, to the schoolhouse, because my teacher told me to stop writing in cursive, right? Because it was it made all the other kids look bad. So at the same time that we're going out here and we're seeing the numbers and we're seeing these things, we got to understand, how do we treat our own people? You know, when it comes to education, when it comes to things like that, because Miss McKenzie has said something that really resonated with me. Those sit down, heart to heart conversations that you have to have with family members that's out there practicing the very, very tools that, you know, they're going to say, hey, look, this is how all of them act. This is how all we react. So when we're talking about the prison system, we're also talking about our lack of community. We're talking about the stands that we've taken with civil rights and how other people have infiltrated our things. We don't do anything for ourselves anymore. And we're waiting for answers. And the prison is going to be the final solution, because as long as we keep waiting and as long as we know what we need to do and not have that hard conversation, CEC is getting rich. Do you know that they have, in majority of the states that they go into, and this is what I'm talking about, constitutional violations and what most people don't understand about the Constitution. Plea bargains are unconstitutional. Law is not working in the court anymore. It's just not. So when we have that going on, and then we have, oh, well, little Johnny lives around electric fields. His math scores is not good. Oh, that's another prison that we need to build. These people are suing states for not being occupied at 85% capacity. There's hotels that are not even at 85% capacity. But we're talking about lives of people. You know, solitary confinement, how we find out that putting people in solitary, how that makes them go into a more mental state. Just what you're doing in prison. And then when you get out of prison, you're a felon. You can't do nothing. You can't vote. You know how many people I've talked to about, you know, getting their civil rights back and amendings and all these types of things? I mean, you're talking about the United States of America. No other country said that we were going to do anything for our people. Yet we put labels on somebody and we treat them according to those. So when you are considered a criminal, which five out of the six panelists up here, if we were looking at the stereotypes, we're criminals or harboring criminals. It's that mindset that we also need to push back on. I mean, we just need to take up some things for ourselves. It's not just gangs. It's not just Blacks committing crimes. It's not Latinos selling cocaine all the time. I mean, you got some pretty lethargic mess that's going on in our corrupt criminal system. I'll just keep it as that.
Yeah. If you don't mind me jumping in, because I'm actually have to jump off this one early, just because I've got, looks like the people here are having problems with my car. But I want to say, so I said, here's the problem. A wheel can't turn unless it's round, which means this problem's really hard because we have to attack multiple things at once, right? We can attack the prison system, reform it, fix it, get people out sooner, incarcerate less. Then you turn around and you go, well, we've got gangs. Well, how are we going to address gang issues? Well, if there's no opportunity for young kids in certain communities and there's no education system in those communities, where are they going to turn to for camaraderie? Where are they going to turn to for safety? So fix the prisons, still got the gangs. Fix the gangs, we still have an education system that's failing someone. So unfortunately, in order to correct the problem, we don't need it perfect in every area, 10 out of 10, I'll take a 5 out of 5, but in everything. So we're fixing the broken education system. We're fixing the prison system. We're bringing opportunities to kids to show them there is another path for you, right? So you could fix one of those spokes, but the wheel still bumps the wrong way. And that's one of the challenges we face is, and besides the systemic racism, okay, that's another part of the wheel. And that's why I think one of the, why this has been such, because you would say to yourself, like you guys have said, or Tanya said, well, I went to my daughter, my nephew and said, stop, it's going to lead to, you know, this is going to lead a bad path. I think a lot of mothers and aunts and uncles are going to their kids in the gangs and saying, stop, this is going to lead to a grave. And look, I've seen a lot of interviews with gangbangers. Many of them said, I don't expect to live past 20 something years old. Like, you know, everybody knows it, but we don't have a solution to change it across the board. And that's what, you know, sort of frustrating and challenging, I would guess I'd have to say.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. Tanya, you wanted to respond?
Beth, what you just said is completely on point, which is some of them don't expect to live long, right? One of the things that I have to give a lot of pushback on is when people are saying that they never had anybody in their life, they didn't have any role models. And I have to disagree with that. I have never met, I don't care in what community, you can be Cleveland, East Palo Alto, Stockton, New York, that did not have someone that tried to show them love or a different direction. They just didn't want it. Or they didn't have people in their family that encouraged that. And we have to start taking more responsibility for the role that we play in the young lives around us. It doesn't necessarily always have to be your kid. It could be your kid's friend. It could be whoever else around. You are an example. And if we don't take our role as the adult in the room seriously, we are going to continue to feed into this system. I have not yet met someone that honestly did not have someone in their corner, whether it was a pastor, a teacher, there is somebody that is trying to push them in the right direction. But we also have to take responsibility for if we are encouraging that positive behavior, that positive step. I have seen families that were just like, you know, she's shucking and jiving over there. She's over there, you know, like Salim said, how we do our own people. We don't always encourage you to get beyond the generational dysfunction. We don't always encourage you to live outside of the boundaries maybe your uncles that you saw were living in. Some of them are encouraged to do it. Do what Uncle Tony was doing. Do what Uncle such and such was doing. That's fine. Or they don't speak against it. We have to start taking responsibility for how we perceive and how we support getting outside of those dysfunctions that we grew up in. Yeah, your daddy might be in and out of jail, but your uncle or your grandfather was, I'm sure somebody in that house or in that family or that next door neighbor or that teacher has said, let me help you. Yeah, you're always going to have those that are speaking against you. But when you decide as a child, as the young person, that that's not something you want to do, it's usually because there's someone else in your ear that is discouraging it, or you just don't want to. And there are some people that are more prone to delinquent behavior. We have to be able to acknowledge that. But like Salim said, we have to look at how we're treating each other and how we're encouraging each other and how we're playing a role in the young lives that we are a part of. I just haven't personally, in all of my 40 something years, have never seen someone that didn't have anybody in their life trying to encourage them to do the right thing. They just didn't want to.
Powerful. Lanika, your thoughts?
Well, I will say that first off, going back to what Raylene was talking about with the third grade, I actually went to school for early childhood growth and development. That is what my piece of paper is in. You know, I've always had a love. I've been dealing with kids since I was 10 years old with my little brothers. So I've always had a passion to help kids as well as know what it feels like to be one of those kids. And that's what prompted me to start Positive Inspirations, which is my mentorship. I have mentored by myself over 100 and something kids. I agree with most of what Tanya was saying, except for this, Tanya. Sometimes it is nobody that they have, but this is the time to add on to what you were saying. This is the time for us to be that. If you see that nobody has that in their life, because some kids absolutely don't. And I'll tell you why, because the whole time I've been in South Carolina, I had to take in 10 kids into my home myself and then adopting three of them that's still here now. By myself, with the government will not help. That's a whole nother show. The government
will be back next week.
Yeah, the government will not. The DSS system is, yeah, that's a whole nother one. But these kids absolutely had nobody, literally, and was to go into the system, was on the verge to go into the system to just be thrown wherever. So I feel like if we get to the kids early, you know, like Raylene was saying, do you know that, I'm not sure of the exact statistic now, but before, out of the incarcerated people, who failed a grade, you know what grade they failed the most? The third grade.
Third.
So that ties right into what Raylene was saying. And it said, that's why they use that, because they used to not test our babies so early, but testing used to start in the third grade. So, you know, that's where you kind of got to show up and see. Your teacher can't just pass you along. You know, if you ain't up to snuff, then they, you know, start holding you back and all that other stuff. So it is really an entangled web of craziness that is set up, you know, for somebody. So I encourage people, if you know somebody or suspect a kid who does not have somebody, be that person for them. It could be something small. You don't have to, you know, like, go take them out, but you can give them positive words, like make good choices. You know, you're going to be somebody. Give them positive affirmations so that way they can feel good, because some of them have never heard that. Some of them have never felt that. Like Tanya said, some of them, you know, families are encouraging them to do the wrong things. So I agree with everything except for it really is some kids that I have seen who absolutely don't have nobody at all.
I hear what you're saying. I can see both points, and as far, because, but I also tend to believe that too often we allow people to say that they have nobody, and I think that nobody tends to be like the father figure or the mother figure or the immediate family. But so often there are other people that they could look at, the neighbor who's working his job, or the person across the street who's a business owner, or maybe they go to the taco stand all the time, and this person is an entrepreneur and doing something different. There's so many people around us that we see, but we may not specifically say that person is a role model for me. Paul, you're just dying. Go, Paul.
No, I'm almost laughing because I feel like the script is flipped. Like everyone here on the panel is saying, we got to take responsibility for ourselves. The Black community has to take responsibility for itself, right? Which is usually what the white community says, or the African community, like, you know, stop making excuses with it. Take it, you know. So, and I'm sort of flipped. I hear Salim said it, Tanya said it, even Lanika said it. We have to take responsibility for ourselves. And I'm sitting here going, wait a minute, I get it. But if you're that one role model for that young child to say there is a better way, right? But then they go to school and they can't get the right education because they've been given up on in the education system. So I want to be better. I can't move because I don't have the money. So I'm stuck. Now, the school system fails them. Or if there's one role model saying you could be better, you could be better. But then 9 out of 10 other people are dragging them into the drug trade, or the people they have to hang out with, the community, like the education system won't work. So I almost feel like I'm on the other side now going, yeah, I get it that, you know, there is personal responsibility. But if there's that one shining voice and 20 other things that are pulling you the other way, like, I know I have to work out, but if I walk into a house full of crappy food and a bunch of heavy friends and stuff like that, it's going to be hard to just say, I can't afford a gym. So I think it's a balance. Yes, I 100% think that there's personal responsibility, but it's not so easy. I could choose not to be in a gang. I live in Northern Westchester. If I lived in a community where if I wasn't in a gang, I might not be protected. So I think that there's personal responsibility balanced with, we need to give opportunity. We need to educate. We need to get money and resources into communities. So
we do. I feel like I switched sides.
Like I'm on the other side now.
But Paul, this goes into what I said last week when I said, if we come from the belief system that everyone is doing the best that they can do right now at this moment, right? It comes from that perspective. Now, I know that people oftentimes will be like, what do you mean the best they could do? They ain't even, they sitting on their ass, they're not doing what they're supposed to do, right? But let's say that we come from the perspective and of the belief that people are doing the best that they can do at this moment. And I say at this moment because tomorrow may look different. Next week may look different. It's giving that opportunity to say, now, if that person is doing the best that they can do at this moment, what can I do? What can we do culturally? How can we encourage that person to do even more than what they're doing, what they feel like they're doing the best they could do, right? And so coming up from that perspective, I'm not putting the blame on just that person solely, because I don't know what the cognitive ability is. I don't know what that child, or that person's past trauma experience is. I don't know if truly that third grader is doing the best that they could do, right? And so I often stray away from placing the blame on others about their ability, because I feel like as you said, Paul, there's so many barriers and so many different things that could be blocking. I mean, you could have that kid that is scoring low on their academic test scores, but when they go home, they got to figure out what they're going to eat. They got to figure out how they're going to get it done. So in saying that, you know what, I feel like that person can do more than what they're doing, that's me placing my judgment on someone else. That's me placing my fortitude or my resiliency on somebody else, saying, if I could do it, you can too. And sometimes it's not that cut and dry.
Yeah, I think I'm more, I hear you, and I agree to a certain extent, but that's why I call you, because you're my empathy partner. Like, Raylene, help me, you know, empathize. But I just want to say this. People have heard about the 92 riots, the LA riots that just destroyed Los Angeles. Reginald Denny, who was pulled out of the truck and beat in the intersection of Florence and Normandy. That day when that occurred, it was literally two blocks from my house. That was where I grew up. The neighborhood that I grew up in is where they literally set it on fire. So I understand these streets a lot more than a lot of people. But the thing is, I have seen some of the most successful people come out of those same neighborhoods, South Central Los Angeles, who have had the same type of pressures of gangs and not having enough money or not having enough food. It's like Salim was saying, he chose to read that book. There were books available that he may not even have them in his school. Maybe he went to the library next door. To me, I do think that we need to have compassion for people and empathy for people. But I also think that we need to hold people's feet to the fire and say, truly, is there more that you could have done? Tanya, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, real quick. I want to applaud Lanika, but and with that, I want to comment on what I was saying. I told you I was a gun violence survivor with another child. We watched my mom get shot and his father die. And I wrote a book about the experience. And during that time, I did the research to find out what happened to him also, right? I wanted to know how his life turned out, because we were kept separate. Same experience, 2 years apart. I found out he is doing life in prison right now. And so I, you know, looking at that situation, I wanted to really examine why were there are two different trajectories for the same lifestyle, basically. We homeless shelter, all kind of crazy stuff. And I applaud people like Lanika. So when I say you can't say that you don't have anyone, she came out and took other people's children into her home. And I always applaud these angels on earth that do things like that. So yes. When I say that they don't have, people say they don't have anyone, there's a million Lanikas out there. And if it wasn't for people like you, people like me wouldn't still be on this earth. So I know that they're there. That's all I wanna do, is acknowledge the fact that I know that there are people like you, like us, that give of themselves for children that are not even theirs, just because it's the right thing to do. And I think I'm just lending more credibility to the fact that I believe there's more people that want to do good just because it's the right thing to do. No matter what color they are. There were coaches that made sure I got to where I needed to get to, neighbors that just fed us because they just, it's just who they are. And I just won't lend on a crutch that says, you know, our society is just full of all these awful people. They're just louder. Yes. But there are people like you that save lives on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm. Lanika.
Well, first off, I appreciate you. I really don't think like I'd be doing anything, you know, like I just feel like my whole big mission, like part of my mission statement is I'd be who I wish I had when I was growing up.
Amen.
Me being that kid, I know what it's like. I know what it's like to battle wanting to kill yourself or kill your mother. Mm. I know what that's like. I know what it's like to be abused, but I also know that us as Black women can bounce back a little easier than a Black man. And that's sad to say, but I grew up in a house with both of my little brothers. I was the only physical abused one. I was the only one physically taken away that was taken out the house. My little brother that's incarcerated was out only because he spazzed out so much once, you know, the social worker people came and they told him his sister wasn't coming back. He was 5 years old, spazzed out so bad that he doesn't even remember his childhood from before he was 8 years old, 7 or 8 years old. He doesn't remember any of that, but that's why he was taken away and put with his father. So it is just like, I don't understand. I do get what you're saying, Tanya, because I do teach people that too. You know, you have to learn to make choices for yourself. That is what I push on top and onto my kids. I'll tell you this too. Excuse my mouth, but I tell them they have to learn, fuck it. You have to. You have to learn that. Because if you don't learn that for yourself and you keep worrying about who did what, this one did that, that person is not losing no sleep by what they did to you. So you better not let that stuff hinder you in your life. So this is what I teach them. You know, like, no, you can't, no, baby, your mother has issues, not you. Your parents is the one with issues. You are not the one with issues. So I just try to be who I, you know, wish that I was. But it's crazy because my little brothers who grew up in the same house, who in my eyes didn't have it as bad as I did, struggled. And I turned out different. And I know that is a lot of choices. And part of it is me being a Black woman, because, you know, we are, in my opinion, the strongest beings. But, you know, that it's just a lot of variables. So I appreciate you, Tanya. I just be who, like you say, I just do what I feel is right. I can't sleep knowing somebody's child is gone. No, and I'm not sending them through the system by what I went through. I'm not going to send nobody's child through that. They can all come stay with me, and us and God will figure it out. That's how I roll. Because people be like, how do you do that? We figure it out. That's what, I mean, what you mean? People had 14 kids. And when I tell you, we get a lot of flack because I have one Caucasian girl and I have two mixed girls out of the three that I'm adopting now. And in South Carolina, they give us a lot of flack because we all don't look alike. I had people say, oh, you must be babysitting. No, I'm not. Why? You better not come asking me no questions about what I'm doing. You know,
I want to talk about that a little bit more in detail, because I think that in itself is a very interesting conversation that we can talk about next week. We are coming down to the last few minutes of the show. And what I love to do at the end of every show is just simply allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who is watching the show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives, and let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance here today. And we're going to start with you, Raylene.
Well, I don't know why I got labeled the heart bleeder, but I just want, like I said, I just want us to really come from a belief system that, you know, we as our fellow human beings are, you know, in a place and space where we need each other. And right now, more than ever, with the pandemic and different things of that sort, I just really feel like we have to lean on each other for that support, for that love and that encouragement. We cannot do it alone. And, you know, I'm hearing a lot of, you know, we grew up in the same house and we have different viewpoints or different value systems. And there's a study out there that really talks about that kid that has the it factor. When they're growing up in chaos all around them, they're growing up, they've been abused, they've been neglected, they've been trauma-filled, and their sibling has too, and their sibling goes one way and they go another way. And really talking about that child that has the it factor, because it takes that it factor to make us young women and young men where we are today. And Tanya's right, like it's that one person or that individual that sees that it factor that manifests it and keeps it going. So if you don't take anything else from today, just taking the fact that really being that person and being the change that you want to see.
You like that, Tanya?
I just say to each person, you know, count your blessings and continue to be a blessing to others by doing what you know is right and continuing to build communities that support people not knowing who they are or where they came from. And we do that by just being our best self, being our better self, being compassionate, and stop asking people what's wrong with you. Maybe sometimes just asking them what happened to you. start a conversation, share your own stories, and show your humanity, particularly through this season. It's important, and I just encourage everyone to do that.
Thank you. And to also go to Lady Boss so we can find out more about
you. Come on, girls. Let's get it.
I'm going to be there. Give me 5 minutes, Tanya, just 5 minutes. Lanika, what do you have for us?
Yes, I'm feeling that. I might have to find out about Lady Boss too. But no, I just want to share with everyone to love people. Mm-hmm. Love on people. Care about people. Help people. And know that somebody always has it worse. So oftentimes, if you're feeling down about your own self, why don't you go find somebody to help? I encourage people to do that, because then that will make you feel better about yourself.
Yes, absolutely. That is so powerful. Thank you, Celine.
Man, it's like, where do you start? Because we talk about all these problems and we're sitting in the center of it, you know, piggybacking off of Paul's comment about the wheel. We sit in the center and we have all these spokes that are going out from us. A lot of the things that we are doing, we already know what's right. I mean, we've been talking about the same things for 256 years. It's time for us to go ahead and start, you know, moving or get off the pot. Raylene, I understand I'm a bleeding heart as well. But being a guy, 6'5", 215 pounds is a bleeding heart. You know, I've been called a couple of names until they see what I'm getting ready to do back. defense. But the thing that I love about our people is that we have such a keen mind power, we just don't see it. I graduated out of a group home. Most people don't they don't think that about me. And it's not where you come from, it's where you at. So, you know, my podcast is going to start Monday on Blog Talk Radio, and I'm opening up about slavery because I think that's the first thing that we need to talk about. Start getting those conversations, start getting that out there. You know, this is what inspired me to really talk to guys, telling them about my story. I mean, I'm getting ready to talk to a group of kids here in about an hour that I'm getting ready to teach culinary to for the next year. Starting with a group of girls that I'm getting ready to teach them, because I felt that as a chef, that I am part of the problem. Food is the main part of the problem. And most people will see that. If you want to get the info on my links or anything like that, Salim Amir Bey on Facebook, or, you know, just check us out here. But next Monday, I'm going to start my journey with that. And I'm going to start pulling some of our guys to get to the equal weight of what our Nubian queens are doing out here, because we're falling off. So
let's talk about that. Let's talk about that next week. I definitely want to tune in to your show, because I can't wait to hear what you have to talk about. So please add the link in the comments to this show, and then just keep me posted so we can put it out there. Paul, thank you for staying and hanging around with us. What do you have for us?
Another great show, another learning opportunity for me. I hope for people who watch, you know, by talking, we're learning and we're listening. I think one takeaway reminds me of a call I had a couple nights ago with people. There's three things you get to control: your actions, your reactions, and your mindset. Nobody can control those things. I control what I do. I control how I react to things, and I control how I think and my mindset. I think if we start focusing on that, we could change a lot about us and maybe help others change as well. But I just love the opportunity to come here and learn more from great people and open my eyes up to things that I maybe have never known or never thought about. So I thank you for the opportunity.
I thank you for being here, Paul. One of the things that was so interesting to me about this show, and this was a great show, I loved it, because we always go into different directions, but we started off talking about the prison system without knowing, you know, anyone's background. And we have six people, and at least two out of the six, you know, I don't know everyone else, but Tanya, Lanika, they both have brothers who are dealing with the same challenges on an issue that we may not have thought was that common, right? So we have to start talking about these things and talking about the solution. I am very solution oriented. So that's why I love having these conversations. So I just want to thank you all for being a guest on this week's episode of Face to Face Talk Show. And as always, I want to thank everyone who tuned in to watch this show live, from Raymond to Lloyd to people who are making comments. We definitely appreciate you. But I always ask, don't just watch the show. Please don't just share the show. Be a part of the conversation. Join us on Face-to-Face Talk Show. Go to the website, asksharifah.com, and click on Face-to-Face Talk Show. Until next week, everyone have a safe and a blessed week. Bye now.
Bye all.